Okay. I think there's still some people arriving, but I think we can probably start. This is about then materialism and spirituality and how to balance these things. Or maybe actually a better way of putting it is how to integrate a materialistic lifestyle together with a spiritual lifestyle. Because that is what it really is all about. Because it's not as if we have a choice. Whether we are lay people, even as monks sometimes, you have to think of material things. We don't have a choice in the matter because we have to look after our family. We have to make sure that we have an income to survive. We have to make sure that we have a good life, basically. And because we have to make sure of these things, materialism is part of life. We can't avoid this. So it has to be there. But of course, the spiritual side is also very important. Because in the long run, it is the spiritual side of our life which is going to be beneficial for us. If you look at things in the long term, in terms of the life as a whole, but also in terms of future lives, in terms of this whole idea of rebirth, etc., in the long run, it is a spiritual life. It is of paramount importance. So for that reason, it's very important to get these things together, so we can live a materialistic lifestyle, but we can also have a spiritual life at the same time. So this is, I think, the right way of looking at this, the integration of these two. And how do we integrate a spiritual life and a materialized life? And what you have to do, essentially, you have to say that the most important thing is a spiritual life. Set that highest, set that on top. And then you put the materialistic life or the material aspects of life under, you subsume them, so to speak, under the spiritual life. The spiritual life comes first, and then the material lifestyle comes afterwards. And I'll explain to you basically how this works with a few examples. And the most, maybe the most important example, why it is important to put the spiritual life on top, take the five precepts which you have to practice. As a Buddhist, I'm sure most of you keep the five precepts, and those who don't, I suggest maybe you should consider keeping those because they're very important if you are a Buddhist or even if you are leaning towards being a Buddhist. And if you don't put those five precepts first, if they don't go on top, then it's so easy to lose your sense of integrity in when you pursue material things. Why is that? Because if the precepts aren't clear in your mind, they're not strong in your mind, then when an opportunity comes up to do something which is a bit dodgy, to lie to somebody for material benefit, maybe to cheat somebody a little bit for material benefit, it is so easy to do that unless you have it very clear in your mind that the spiritual aspect, these five precepts, should come first, and then comes the material pursuit afterwards. And this is what I mean, you have to put the spirituality highest, and then the materiality has to fit inside the framework of that spiritual pursuit that you're pursuing in your life. So take the five precepts. I thought maybe one of these precepts might be worth talking a little about in a bit more detail, because it is a precept that is often difficult maybe to integrate into ordinary working life. If you are a business person, for example, you have a job somewhere, and that is the precept not drinking any alcohol. And I think many people find it hard, because in business life, you're supposed to take people out, you're supposed to wine and dine them, make sure they're looked after, etc. And even in private life is often difficult, because there's so much pressure from our peers to engage in these kind of things like drinking alcohol. And it may seem on the surface that drinking a little bit is not so bad. It's only a glass of wine here, a glass of wine there. What's the big deal? Or a glass of beer or whatever your fancy is. But I want to point out that it actually isn't quite as simple as that. First of all, if the Buddha said that it's good to keep the five precepts, well, there must be a reason there. A person like the Buddha wouldn't say you should keep these things unless there was a good reason for it. So it must be a good reason if the Buddha said so. And the first reason, of course, why drinking is dangerous, and this is the obvious one, is because it leads to a mind which is very sluggish and very unclear. You don't really see clearly anymore. You cannot see what is for your own good, what is for the good of others. And if you understand what the precept actually means, we just chanted it before. It says, Sura Meraya Majja Pamadatana Viratmani. It literally means, Sura Meraya are like alcoholic drinks. And Majja Madhya is also an alcoholic drink, and pamada tana means basically something which gives rise to pamada. Pamada is like negligence or heedlessness, a mind which cannot see properly, which starts doing wrong things and not understand that what it's doing is bad. And this, of course, is an obvious reason why we shouldn't be drinking. And then some people say, well, if I only have one glass of wine, not such a big deal, because one glass of wine, you don't feel so heedless, etc. But of course, there is more to it than just that. And the other aspect, which I like to mention as well about drinking, and this, I spoke about this some years in Perth, and after I spoke about it, one more lady came up to me and said, oh, okay, now I understand. Now I'm going to give up drinking altogether, because I thought a glass of wine every now and again is okay. So because she said that to me, I got encouraged to speak about this. So basically, from a Buddhist point of view, the thing is that we take our habits, the habits that we create in this life, we take them with us into future lives. And this, again, it shows you, I said yesterday or a few days ago, I can't remember now when it was, that once you believe in rebirth, or you have a sense that there is such a thing as rebirth, it changes your attitude to things. It makes you think differently. It forces a re-evaluation of things. And this is a classical or a good example of that. Once you then take into account rebirth, if you bring your habits with you from one life to the next life, it means that habit that you have, even if it's only one glass of wine a day, you bring it from life to life with you again and again and again. And of course, one of the things that the Buddha said about drinking alcohol is that there is no limit to alcohol. You always want to increase. You tend to want to increase the quantity of alcohol that you drink. So if one day you have so much alcohol, the next day you'd likely to want a little bit more. And so on it goes and goes from week to week, life to life, month to month, year to year, whatever it is. Slowly increasing, because there is never a sense of satisfaction with alcohol. There is no final barrier where you say, now I have enough. This is actually from the Buddha's own words. So I take that to be basically a psychological fact, if you like. And of course, when you start to see this from lifetime to lifetime, that there is no barrier for how much you want to drink. Once you start a habit like that of drinking, even if it's only one glass of wine a day, or one glass of wine a week, or whatever it is, you take that habit and you take the tendency to increase the amount of alcohol you use also with you from life to life. And after a while, you can see where this is leading. It's leading to a very dangerous place. Eventually, you drink so much that it's no doubt anymore that it's having a very detrimental effect on your life. And one of the other things that Buddha said was that drinking, the karmic result of drinking, that this is obviously drinking a lot, is madness. You're going insane by drinking a lot. And we know what that is like. We know what that is like because if somebody is an alcoholic, if somebody is in a very bad state of drinking a lot, you take the alcohol away, they start to have all kinds of hallucinations. They have this thing called deliriums or whatever, which comes as a result of drinking too much. And you can see there that this is a kind of insanity, a kind of madness which comes onto a person because of drinking. So in a sense, by drinking at all, we are in a danger of creating a habit which ultimately will lead to some very, very bad and unfortunate states. And I think if you look around the world today, you see lots of people suffer from all kinds of psychological disorders, schizophrenia, bipolar disease, and all these kind of things. And I think many of these could very well be the result of drinking in a past life, or even drinking in this life. Often drug use can often give rise to these kind of mental illnesses as well. So for this reason, this is just one way of looking at this thing with alcohol, which makes it a bit more paramount to actually give it up altogether. It's a good thing to give this thing up altogether. And the reason I'm saying this, the reason I'm putting this emphasis on this, is because I want to give you a firm grounding for why you should say no, even in business life, even when you have to take people out, you have to look after them, you have to make sure they're okay. It's good to find an excuse, good to find a good reason why you don't want to drink, why you don't want to do this. And Ajahn Brahm told me the story, I'm sure he has probably said it here before as well, I think I mentioned it the other day as well, is, you know, sometimes all you can do, you can say, no, doctor's orders, I can't drink. And you may think, well, that sounds a bit like cheating, because surely the doctor didn't say that. But the point is, of course, that the Buddha is compared to a surgeon sometimes in the suttas, compared to a doctor. So Buddha's orders, doctor's orders, it amounts to the same thing. So that is one way of sort of coming or going around, getting around this problem. Another reason is simply, you can simply say, it doesn't make me feel any good. And that would be true. From a Buddhist point of view, if you lose your sense of mindfulness, you lose your sense it's a sense of well-being to be mindful. If you lose that, it's true, it doesn't make you feel any good. And then they can make out whatever they want out of that statement, but you're certainly telling the truth. Also, I think one of the important things is to show tolerance to other people. You know, it's not our job. It's nice if we can make people not drink, of course, because we're showing them the right way. But it's not really our job to convert people in that sense. So if other people want to drink, fine, allow them to drink. And that people will be very impressed with that. If you say, no, I don't want to drink because it doesn't make me feel any good, but by all means, if you want to drink, please, that is up to you. I don't really mind that. It would seem very tolerant. It would seem very open-minded. And then people might think, he doesn't drink. I wonder why he doesn't drink. And then maybe you have a chance of actually turning them around and see that there is something here which is worthwhile doing. It's important always not to push people too much. If you try to push people to do what is right, usually 90% of the time, 95% of the time, you will find there is resistance there. People don't want to listen. They listen only when they understand for themselves that this is the right thing to do. Then they will start doing it. So that is just the precept of alcohol. I thought it might be useful to bring up because I know that there are many, obviously many of you have a job and most of you have a job probably. And because of that, these things are things that come up all the time for us. So that is the five precepts. The next thing, so my point here is that we have to put these five precepts first. Then when the five precepts are in place, then whatever the material pursuits we have, whether it's in terms of a job, whatever it actually is in life, they will become subsumed under those five precepts. The spiritual principle comes first, and then the materialistic principle fits in to that spiritual aspect of our life. And the second thing I want to talk about is the act of generosity, how we can be generous in life. And again, it's important to place generosity first. Generosity comes highest, and then under generosity, we place our material pursuits. And as Buddhists, of course, it is natural to be generous to Buddhist causes, and I really encourage you to be generous towards Buddhist causes because it's beautiful, because we believe in Buddhism, we think it's a wonderful religion, we think it has something to offer to the world. It's easy to do that with a good heart in the sense that you're doing something useful. It's always good to be generous to that which is close to our hearts. And there's of course more to generosity than just being generous to Buddhism, but it's an important aspect of it. And I want to just to relate to you briefly how to use that generosity in your life to make it something powerful. Because often we are generous without really thinking about it. We give here, we give there. We think, I can't really think about this. Many people think like that. I shouldn't think about this because it's sort of selfish to think that I'm good because I'm being generous. But in fact, the Buddha said that's not the case. That's not what we should be doing. If we are generous, we should reflect on that. And we should try to gain some happiness from our own generosity. And the way I often encourage people to think about their own generosity, particularly if it is to a Buddhist cause, reflect how far this generosity can actually reach, how far it can go, into places where you may have no idea where they're actually going. When you support something like the monastic sangha is often maybe a part which keeps Buddhism going more than anything else. Well, it certainly has been over the past 2,500 years. In the modern day, things are changing a little bit, but still. Or if you're supporting something like the Buddhist Fellowship, a large organization with large number of members, or you're supporting a monastery somewhere which may reach many, many people. I know my own monastery, or Bodhinyana Monastery best of all, and it is amazing, those talks that are given by Ajahn Brahm and go onto the internet. It's absolutely staggering how many people listen to these things. Literally tens of thousands of people around the world every single week who hear these things. And of course, the point is that this Buddhist message in this way spreads around the world to all the little corners in the Americas, in the US, in Europe, even in Africa. It spreads out to these far away places. And whenever you do an act of generosity which supports this, you have a part of that. You have a part of this beautiful thing, or this wonderful message. We can create happiness in people's life. We can get people away from suffering. You have a part in all this happiness that you're creating around the world in this way. It's part of what you're doing here. And that is such a wonderful thing. When you think like that, that you are helping support this movement which reaches tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of people around the world, then you get a sense of joy often, happiness. Maybe you have some tears coming down your face because of the happiness, and that is good. And then you know that generosity is really working for you. It's doing something very beneficial. So this is one way I would recommend you to reflect and remember this act of generosity. Now, in Buddhism, there is more though than just being generous to Buddhists. The point of Buddhism is to be open-hearted and open-handed and willing, whenever there is a need to give, to be willing to give. That is basically the Buddhist approach. And whenever you, particularly when you have a feeling in your heart, you have a sense of urgency, now I want to give, that is always a very powerful time to give. Because if you want to give, if the kind of the intention is there and the will is there, then it leaves a very powerful impact on the mind. You will remember that act later on because of that joy which arose with the act of giving at the time. So suddenly you get a spontaneous urge to give to somebody, you see somebody poor or somebody, you see a particular cause which it looks worthwhile, and if you get this urge, I should give here, then go for it, by all means. That's the best time to do an act of giving here. But in Buddhism, we should be very broad with the way that we give. And if you read the way the Buddha taught about how we should spend our wealth, there's particularly one sutta which you may have studied yourself called the Sigalovada Sutta, which talks about how we should basically use our wealth, in particular in lay life. This was a sutta given to lay people in particular. And he said one of the interesting things, he said that the first person that we should spend our wealth on, and you can say that this is a kind of generosity. You know who that first person is? It's yourself. Yeah, precisely. You probably read this sutta. You should look after yourself. And of course the point is that if you are wealthy, if you have money, if you have these material things there, of course you should enjoy these things. You shouldn't just put them to one side and feel guilty about it or feel bad about it or think this should go to a good cause somewhere. You should make sure that you get some happiness out of this material wealth that you have. So we should look after ourselves. And this is one of the most important principles in Buddhism. We should always make sure we look after ourselves first of all. If we don't look after ourselves, how can we look after others? If we feel bad about ourselves, how can we feel good about others? These two things go together. If you look after yourself, you will tend to look after others. If you have good feelings about yourself, you will tend also to have good feelings about others. They go together. They are two sides of the same coin. So, therefore, you don't have to feel bad about sometimes taking a nice holiday somewhere or sometimes doing something which feels good in the material sense. That is okay. In fact, it is wrong not to do so, according to the Buddha's teachings. The second thing is, of course, once we have looked after ourselves, we have to look after the people who are closest to us, our families, our husband and wife, our children, our parents. This is the second thing that we have to do. And it's very powerful. Sometimes if we give an extra thought to the people who are close to us, it has a very powerful effect on our family life. Don't always take your family for granted. It's so easy because they're around us all the time. We tend to become sometimes negative. All we see are the things that we see every day. And we all get upset by the same old things every day. But don't take your family for granted. Sometimes do something extra, something special for your family members that makes them feel valued, makes them feel like they're somebody else. So extend this generosity to your family. And this can become anyway, very, very powerful thing. And one of my examples here is recently the rather strange thing happened to me. This for me, it was almost like a small miracle. That may not sound miraculous, but for me it was anyway. I recently went with my family, my parents, my brother and sister, and the in-laws. I went to Malaysia because my parents' 70th birthday, and invited the whole family to Malaysia, to this place in Malaysia. And before we went, my father said to me, maybe you would like to give a small talk on Buddhism every day while we're there. And that is a miracle. If you know what I mean, because the last, you can convert the whole world. Everybody can be your disciple. But the last person who's going to be your disciple is your own father. Because your own father is the person who has brought you up. He is the one who has taught you the world. He is the one who tells you what the world is like. You don't tell him what he should be doing. That's just not the way it works. So that was, for me, that was an absolutely astounding thing. And I've thought about it afterwards. Why is it that was the case? And I think the reason is because after I became a monk, I've been, first of all, in the beginning, your parents think, oh, this is maybe some kind of protest or something, becoming a monk, you don't like our lifestyle, you're doing things your own way. But of course, after a while, you've been a monk for 15 years, they start to think maybe there's something more to it than just a protest. And what I, you know, there are often very small things in life that you do. First of all, you don't push Buddhism onto them. That's the very first thing, because that would make them react negatively. I never told them that you have to call me Ajahn Brahmali. You can call me whatever you like. You can use my lay name if you want. And very often I would support my parents. I would use teachings of Buddhism that supported them. And sometimes my father, for example, sometimes somebody might have said to him that he should be more generous with his money, or, you know, he doesn't deserve the money he has or something like that. And I would tell him that, well, whatever wealth you have, you deserve that. This is the Buddha's teachings. If you have wealth, you wouldn't have it if you didn't deserve it. It is there because you deserve it. And of course, these kind of things, if you use the teachings in this way to counteract the tendencies they get from society around them, to feel better about themselves, in the long run, it has a tremendously powerful impact. And this is what I found with my own father. Initially, he was very skeptical and he sort of dismissed the whole Buddhist idea. But after 15 years, he has come around to the point where he asks, maybe you can teach the whole family about this thing that you're doing, what Buddhism is all about. And now he reads books about Buddhism and does all these kind of things. And that is an amazing turnaround. And I must have done something right, I think, to actually get things to that point. So I'm very, very pleased with that, I have to say. So, and also, you know, the Buddha said that one of the wonderful things you can do for your parents in life is to bring them onto the spiritual path. Make them understand that virtue, morality is important, generosity is important, and make them move towards Buddhism. If you can do that, you're giving your parents the highest possible gift in this world. So this is an example of what you can do in family life if you practice correctly. And I would say for those of you who are young here, if you want to persuade your parents, if you want to get your parents to listen to you, sometimes do something nice to your parents. Sometimes show them that you care for them. It's very, of course, I'm not saying that you shouldn't be in opposition. I think opposition is part of being young, is part of that. But don't be in opposition all the time, 100% of the time. Because I think what happens, if you are in opposition 100% of the time, your parents will still understand you and see you as immature in a certain way. But if you do something beautiful every now and again, it doesn't have to be often, just every now and again, your parents will open your parents' hearts. And when you open your parents' hearts, they will be more ready to listen to you and understand you from your point of view. So if you can do that as a child to a parent, wow, you have a tremendous benefit over almost all other young people, because you may actually be able to have parents who really listen to you and take you seriously. That is a wonderful thing. And of course, it is the same thing for parents. Look after your children, look after your family. Every now and again, show that you care. Do something special which opens up their hearts, so that you if you have a sense that there is more to family life than just living together. There is a sense of caring there, a sense of love and compassion for each other. So that is the family life. Then you also have the third thing the Buddha said, you should look after your employees. So if you are a businessman or a businesswoman and you have people working for you, or you are a particular place in the corporate hierarchy and you have people under you in the hierarchy, or if you have a maid, for example, working for you in your house, and it was very common in Singapore to have a maid working for you, make sure that you care even for that maid, because it is so important. If you want to get the best out of that maid, make sure that you do something every now and again, something special for this maid. Make sure that they feel cared for, that they feel that they are accepted into the family. And you can do things like, obviously, you can sometimes pay them a little bit extra when there is an occasion for that. But sometimes you can maybe, you know, try to remember what it's like to be a maid in Singapore. Maybe your family is overseas, your children are overseas, and it's often very difficult. So have some compassion on them. Understand that life is not necessarily easy for these people. Buy something for the children that they can take back with them when they go back home. Do something special, something unique, so they feel a sense that which opens them up, makes them feel much better where they are. That's also a wonderful thing to do. And the same thing goes for employees. Look after your employees. Look after those who you are responsible for in the corporate hierarchy. And then you will get so much more out of these people than if you don't do that. And it becomes a beautiful getting out of people, not a bad one, but a beautiful one, because they do it voluntarily. And it's good for them, it's good for you, and it becomes a very nice nice thing altogether. And of course, then the last one that the Buddha said is that, of course, we also have to give to... I'm not sure what he said after this. But somewhere down the list, he said, it's also good to give, you know, to monks and ascetics as well. And that I've already covered in a sense. But generally speaking, the point of Buddhism is to have an open heart, to have an open hand, not to be stingy about things. If you get really, sometimes you see these extraordinarily wealthy people who are incredibly stingy and live really miserable lives. And it's a very narrow kind of mind state. It's not a beautiful mind state. A state of generosity in the mind is much more pleasant to live with, much more happy kind of state. So something worthwhile developing in your life is something beautiful. So that is generosity for you, and why it is important to place that very high on your agenda. Place that above your material pursuits, so that when you have material pursuits, generosity is always high on your agenda. You should know about these things. And these are the two things in life which are the most important in lay life: generosity and keeping the five precepts. If you can do that much, if that is all you do, you're already doing a lot as a Buddhist and you're practicing really well. So if you can do that, great, wonderful, it's excellent. Sometimes the question is, should we go any further? Should we do anything more? And one of the important ways of deciding whether you should go any further than just doing this, maybe you should get into a bit of meditation practice, maybe you should look at your virtue in other ways than just the five precepts. One way of deciding that is to do what comes natural to you. It's important not to press the spiritual life too hard, to try too much, and then, because when you try too hard, sometimes it becomes unpleasant. And the last thing you want to do is to make a spiritual practice unpleasant. If the spiritual practice becomes unpleasant, you will slowly but surely turn away from this Buddhist path because it becomes too hard for you. So if you want to do meditation, if you want to do other kinds of kindness and generosity in life, try it out, but if you find it too difficult, don't keep pushing it. And particularly that goes for meditation practice, because meditation should not just be something you do because you feel you have to do it as a Buddhist. It's something that you should do because you get something out of it. So if you haven't done meditation before, start off very, very gently with yourself. Do 5 minutes a week. If you can do 5 minutes a week, it's already a good start. Everybody can do 5 minutes a week of meditation. More important than the amount of time you sit is that you have like a regular practice. You do it again and again all the time. So have a 5 minute slot, a regular slot that you do every single week. And when you do meditation, don't just... there's many different things you can do. And I know that many people, when you have a busy life, the mind is either very restless, it keeps running around all the time. Many people have told me that that is a problem. Or the mind is very tired because you have been running around so much you don't have any more energy in the mind. So often the kind of things you can do is not to do a formal meditation where you try to watch the breath or you try to have compassion or metta toward all living beings. Very often all you can do is just sit down on a chair or sit on wherever you want or walk back and forth or whatever and reflect on all the good qualities in people around you. Reflect on the good qualities of the people in your family. Reflect on your own good qualities. I have been actually brought in metta toward oneself in the meditation. That is also very important. Reflect on the good people in a place like the Buddhist Fellowship. If everybody here reflects on each other's good qualities, you have such a beautiful and harmonious and nice place because everybody will have a sense of compassion and metta towards each other. Reflect on the good qualities in people in the workplace. We've been hearing the last few days how much trouble there is in the workplace, how much office politics there is, and how difficult it can be. So it's worthwhile taking time out to remember that even if people are difficult, they still very often have good qualities behind those difficulties. And just that much, if you just take 5 minutes a week, just reflecting on the good qualities and people around you, and that's all you do, you're already creating the basis there for compassion, for kindness, for love for the people around you. And that is already a very good starting point for turning your mind around, changing your perceptions about things. And slowly but surely, if you do that week after week, month after month, year after year, it will have a powerful impact on the way you think and the way you perceive the people around you. Of course, there will come a point when you might say to yourself that 5 minutes a week is not enough. I should do 5 minutes twice a week, or I should do 10 minutes twice a week, or I should do 5 minutes every day, or whatever. My point is only, whatever you do, allow it to come naturally. Don't force these things. Make it come as a consequence of the practice of understanding that this is a good thing to do, and that will lead me forward in happiness, not only me, but also the people around me. It will lead them forward in happiness as well. If I am more care and kind and loving and a good person, it will have a tremendous impact on the people around me as well. So this is how I would recommend you to approach meditation. Don't try to force things too hard, and do things which actually have a direct effect that you can see it works. Don't try to sit there watching the breath if that doesn't work for you. Do something which actually can work. And metta is one of those powerful things. There are other things as well that you can do as a Buddhist, and I'm going to mention maybe a few things just in passing. And one of the things that I like to do, and I know that it can be very beneficial for many people, whether you are layperson or monastic, is sometimes remember your own mortality. Remember that one day you're going to die. This is not going to last forever. And there is a powerful effect that this kind of reflection can have on you. If you know that you're going to die, you also know that ultimately the spiritual qualities are more important than the material things. Because the material things, you're going to have to leave them behind when you die. You're going to have to leave your body behind, no matter how good you feel about yourself. You're going to have to leave this body behind when you die. No matter how rich you are, no matter how many friends you have, no matter how much wealth, possessions you have, it's all going to be left behind. So ultimately, of course, when you remember death, you also remember that developing the mind is far, far more important than developing material things. It gives you a sense of perspective, a very powerful sense of perspective. And also, if you remember that you're going to die, you also tend to put away all the petty things in life. You tend to put away anger. Imagine yourself on your deathbed. Are you going to be angry on your deathbed? And are you going to sort of start shouting at people? And that doesn't make any sense. When you die, when you know that you're going to have to leave all these things behind, it is very easy to give up that anger and negativity, because it doesn't make any sense anymore. Why be angry with somebody who you're never going to see again? Anger comes because of our attachments to the world. When you're about to die, that's the point in life when people usually tend to give up their attachments, because you have no choice anymore. So you tend to release, and that's how it works. So the thought of death can be very, very powerful and very, very useful. And also some of our excessive desires can also be given up in this way. And you will generally speaking, you will find that if you do this practice properly and it works, it will lead to an enormous amount of peace for yourself. You'll feel much more peaceful in life. And that, of course, is a very beautiful and nice feeling when we feel peaceful. So this is one thing you can do. There are sometimes people who say that, I don't like the thought of death. It makes me feel, it's very unpleasant for me. I can't bear to think about these things. Of course, if you can't bear to think about it, then don't do it. There's plenty of other things you can do anyway. So be careful. Again, don't do things which are, which you find hard or too difficult. Do things which come naturally. Allow these things to come naturally. Try it out. If it works, great. If it doesn't work, just leave it to side for a while. Maybe next year you can try the death contemplation again and see if things have changed. Because things will change. And this is the thing. If you practice properly, things will change. Practices which didn't work before will suddenly start to work, because you are changing all the time as you walk this path. And then the last thing is, you can increase your idea of morality and goodness beyond just keeping the 5 precepts, beyond just being generous. And this is by thinking. Very often, as Buddhists, we tend to focus on the negative aspect of morality. We say we shouldn't be bad, we shouldn't do this, we shouldn't do that. But what about all the things we should do? Isn't that also important? And it is. When you read what the Buddha said, he said, not only shouldn't we steal, we should be generous. Not only should we not kill beings, we should be compassionate to living beings. Not only shouldn't we lie and say bad things, we should say things which goes to the heart. We should say things which are meaningful. We should say things which unite people together. Not only shouldn't we be angry, we should have loving kindness. So you can see there is an opposite in all these things. So the last thing we can do, if we have some extra energy left after all these other things, and if it comes naturally to you, contemplate how you are treating people in your life. Are you treating them with kindness? Are you treating them in a way where they feel good about themselves? Are you saying things which go to people's hearts? And if you are practicing in this way, then you are really practicing a very, very high standard of morality when you treat people kindly in this way. And this is kind of the last thing that you can also do in lay life. So again, if you want to do this, put this before your material pursuits. So that is essentially the talk this evening. But my essential point is simply to make that if you want to have a spiritual life, if you want to practice the Buddha's teachings, you're going to have to place it on top of your agenda. If you don't place it on top of the agenda, you're not going to be able to do it. Because sometimes the material pursuits, whether it is in office life, whether it is in your work or whatever it is, sometimes it's going to ask you to do things which Buddhism says you shouldn't be doing. And unless the spiritual thing is on top, then you may fall into that Mara's trap and do things which you actually know in the long run is not for your own benefit.